This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters Reporters.
Presented by Burger King. Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Why would I listen to anybody else?
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Burger King, American Express, Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we welcome you in. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King here on a Tuesday evening following another very disappointing Jaguars performance at home. Cole Pepper, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, of course, at the controls. And there are four ways that you can become a part of the show. You can call 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can tweet to at John Osher or at Cole Pepper. You can go on Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars, interact there. Or you can write in calligraphy on parchment, send your letter, and we'll read it the next show we have, which is actually not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after that. Those are the only kind of letters I read. Or
so
parchment.
We'll have time to get here through the U.S. mail.
Yes,
so
or through a personal courier, if that's what you use. So we'll accept that as well. You know, either way, you can join the conversation. And, well, John, as you might say, let's get to it.
Yeah, and a good sigh before that would be
all right,
be fine.
If I may.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Let's get to it.
And now, three burning questions.
Joe Fortunato has the three burning questions for us.
Ouch. Hot. Okay. Question one, does this team have a problem handling adversity?
Well, you know, yeah, so far, and I'm hesitating because I'm not sure that in the last couple of games they've had a chance to face that much adversity because the game got away from them so fast. But clearly the other day, when it's 6-3 and you throw the interception the other way, it feels like they had a problem handling adversity, but I think bigger than that, Joe, is that once they get down by 10, you just don't feel like there's the offensive momentum, the firepower. You haven't seen them be able to piece two scores together. So that's what I got more is once they went down 13, the air went out. I mean, by 10, the air went out of you on Sunday. And that shouldn't be the case. A 10-point game shouldn't be over with. So I don't know about the adversity thing, and I'm not sure we've seen that as much yet because they certainly had adversity in the first couple of games in Minnesota and in Indy, and offensively handled it pretty well. So I'm not sure they don't handle that well.
But one, I will say this, though. One play that doesn't go their way shouldn't be the end of things. And, I mean, I realize the offense isn't doing much right now, but they can't – and this goes back to the point that we were talking about last week about somebody kind of taking the bull by the horns. And somebody's got to be that guy. In an ideal situation, it's the quarterback. One of the truths of the NFL is if you're going to lead, you better have done something.
Right.
And so,
well, they don't have. They clearly don't have very many guys with a capital G. You know, Maurice Jones-Drew is the guy.
Yep.
And beyond that, you know, Derek Cox defensively is starting to play very, very well. I don't know if he's in guy class yet. You know, so you've really got one guy, and when one of those guys is not a quarterback or a wide receiver, it's tough for that guy to make a huge impact once you get behind. And that's part of the problem. That's what you feel when you're down by 10 and you're thinking, boy, I don't know where they're going to get, you know, the two touchdowns from.
Yeah.
That's because Maurice Jones-Drew is the guy you want to rely on. It's hard to rely on him down 10.
We've seen a few little flashes. Cecil Shorts.
Right.
Blackman. Here and there. Even, you know, but they've got to put it together more. It's got to happen more often. It's got to be more consistent. And, again, they can't let their lack of previous offensive explosion affect their approach, derail the future of it. By saying, well, geez, we need two scores. How are we ever going to get there?
And as you just said that, and again, fans get tired of hearing about, you know, youth. And in some spots, they're not young. In other spots, they are. You know, you point to the Colts this weekend. Andrew Luck threw for a lot of yards and threw for 220 to Reggie Wayne, a guy who has been there before and has handled situations and has a reliable history. And that just that's the one that comes to mind. But the three guys you just mentioned, Blaine, Cecil Shorts, and Justin Blackmon, Blaine's played, you know, well, what's the number now, 19 games, and that number dwarfs the other two guys. So that, I think, is part of it, is not necessarily knowing exactly who to go to when you need something. And that can take time. And I get that fans are sick of hearing about things taking time, but that element does take time.
All right, keeping with the theme of, as Johnny said, not having enough guys with a capital G, question two, is Darryl Smith going to make a difference when he comes back?
You know, I think the biggest problem with the defense right now is the lack of pass rush. Maybe the biggest problem on the team top to bottom. I mean, it may sound crazy coming off a team scoring 3 points last week. But
yes, you're right.
But that's a huge issue right now. And so if you want to say, you know, what kind of an impact can Darryl Smith have, Darryl Smith can help put you in better situations. He's your best pass rush linebacker. Mm-hmm. He can make the best. He's more likely to make big plays.
Yes.
He's their best big play line. Huzlesny is very steady.
You know, to interrupt you, he set the franchise record for tackles for losses last year.
Right, sure.
And that's a stat, as you and I know, that gets overlooked because it's in there in the release, and you're thinking, well, this is one Ryan Robinson, you know, came up with, but you don't really pay that much attention to it until you don't see it on the field and you realize, okay, they're not in as many second and 12s because they're not getting that two-yard tackle for a loss that a Darryl Smith made. And then Clint Session, beginning of last year, made some of those kind of plays. And as you were getting to, when you're not setting guys back and getting into second and 12 and third and 8, those are much different pass rushing situations. I don't know that the line's a great pass rushing line in any situation, but it's certainly better if it has obvious passing situations, and there hasn't been that many of those this year.
I do believe in some cases, you know, if you're going to rush the passer with four, you've got to have the horses. If you don't have the horses, you can find some ways to sometimes create that pressure, whether it's blitz or just personnel usage. And one of the things I think that, you know, Derek Cox is playing well right now. The Jaguars don't have anybody else, I think, who they feel very comfortable in terms of coverage on a, you know, for an extended period of time down the field. I think it may be time to start doing something that Mel Tucker typically has not done, which is, you know, throw some more blitzes out there. Try to get more pressure, be more creative, but you can't do that when you're in second and four.
True.
And third and two.
Very true.
You need to be in third
and six
plus.
That's where the run defense the other day. You know, I had written a couple weeks back that the run defense hadn't played well most of the year. And, you know, some people debated that in the third and fourth week they played better. But it hasn't been stifling. And it's really important for a pass rush when you don't have necessarily that impact pass rusher for the run defense to be stifling, because that puts you in the situations where you know, can really peel the ears back and go. I thought it was significant that from the eye test, you watched Derek Cox the other day and you thought he played pretty well. He made some plays on the ball. He probably covered Brandon Marshall pretty well, except for maybe the one play.
There were two plays that I went,
right.
When I looked, went back and watched.
But I think everybody would agree that he did okay.
Yeah.
And yet, because the pass rush wasn't getting there, it's impossible to cover a receiver like Brandon Marshall for 5, 6, 7 seconds. Pass coverage is designed to cover for 4 or 5 seconds, and I thought Derek Cox and the entire secondary had to cover way too long.
Yeah, and if you look at the Jaguars' schedule coming up, the kind of receivers that they're going to have to cover going down the field, you know, the Raiders may not necessarily have that big-time guy, but Packers, you know, with Jennings, with the Lions, with Calvin Johnson, the Colts again with Reggie Wayne, the Texans, Andre Johnson. There's some guys who can really hurt you if you have to try to cover them for any length of time, more than a couple of seconds, they're guys who have made a living getting open. You can't give them more of an opportunity to do that.
Well, the reality is most teams have guys like that. Right now, the Jaguars don't quite have that reliable go-to receiver, and that's what's got to come.
Yeah, and by the way, there are some teams on the Jaguars' schedule coming up that may not have that guy either.
Right.
And those teams that are struggling right now, Titans, Jets, Bills, you can make the case for, there's some sort of second-level star wide receivers. But
and
not
that
the
seems to
guys.
Separate a lot of things.
Dolphins, another one. All right.
All right, last question, guys. What's the best thing about having your bye week come now?
Personally? Or
both, Johnny.
Well, clearly, you're 1-4, and you need to at least look. The Jaguars keep talking about we're going to continue doing what we're doing. And that's really the only thing to do during the season. You cannot go back and change schemes. I've been saying for a couple weeks, you're not going to have a bye week draft. So there's a limit to how much you can really change, but you do need to go back and look and self-evaluate and make sure that what you're doing is the right thing. And that's very difficult to do during a regular game week. It can be done on the bye week to a point.
I think it also gives them an opportunity to step back without having to worry about putting together a game plan specifically.
Right.
And this is maybe kind of what you're talking about. And say, and play what if. Because sometimes what if is the best way to start a conversation that will lead to some change. And I know Mike Mularkey has said you got to stay the course and so forth. And I think what he's talking about there, I haven't asked him this question directly, but I think what he's talking about there is that their approach in terms of teaching and how they're going to handle practices and that sort of thing is going to continue. But there's no such thing as not changing anything in the NFL because every week you have to change and adjust to something.
Right.
And so whether that's adjusting personnel, whether that's adjusting, play calling set, whether it's adjusting who's playing at what positions, it's just
when players say something. That, what they mean is, it's not like you're going to throw some exotic scheme and all of a sudden be better. It's doing what you're supposed to be doing a little better and having all 22 guys do it. And fans get worn out on hearing that because they hear it all the time. They hear stay the course. But from a player and even a team perspective, that's really the only choice you have because there are not significant dramatic changes that you're going to make on a 9 a.m. meeting on a Wednesday where you're going to come out at 3 p.m. and go, we got it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
You have weeks of training camp to put that stuff in and install it.
And years of personnel acquisition and planning and, getting used to each other. I mean, it takes time, and it's not going to just change in 6 hours on a Wednesday.
All right. Back with more. When we come back, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you maybe don't know from Sunday's game. Also, your calls and comments, 800-355-NFL1. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper or at John Osher. Jaguars Facebook page, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. You could be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to win Conn's Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win. Back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here, 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. At Sonny's, you get a heap and help of baby back ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread for only $12.99. All you can eat, just $4 more. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. All right, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you maybe didn't realize from Sunday's game.
How well we covered on the punt team versus a Hall of Fame returner. Devin Hester ended up with a 2-yard average.
2-yard average with Devin Hester?
Yeah, it's
a little positive there.
That's impressive. And, Anger had a couple of big punts. And
Julian Stanford did a nice job on coverage, by the way, going back. Again, I went back and looked at, watched the game today and looked at. Some different things in particular. We'll talk about as we get into the show a little bit. But there are three guys who I really took a close eye and really watched to see how they played. You know, it's tough to really zero in on one guy in the course, you know, watching it the first mm-hmm. time through. So I've gone back and looked at Eugene Monroe, Blaine Gabbert, and Tyson Alualu. We'll talk about that here in just a bit. All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Kevin in Mandarin, who will lead us off here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Kevin, how you doing?
Good, Cole. Good. How you doing, John?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, man. Appreciate you guys. Listen every week. Big fan here. Disappointed, obviously. I'm past my anger and frustration stage, and I'm into my acceptance stage, so I just want to throw that out there.
Going here, that stage of grief, huh?
Yeah. No, I really am. I mean, I realized this past week there's just no point going to the games and getting angry and frustrated because, you know, quite frankly, it's no fun. I just try to go and enjoy myself, and it is what it is. It's football, and we've got it, and there you go.
Yep.
But anyways, wanted to just kind of bounce it off you guys, and I'll take it off the air. I was looking at the remaining, I don't want to say the second half of the season because we're not halfway through the season yet, but the schedule of games left after the bye week. And, you know, we've played some pretty tough teams so far as it's turned out in the first part of the season here. And obviously you never want to look at the schedule and say, oh, well, that's a win or that's a loss. You know, I myself have learned that over the years of being a fan. But I was just wanted to get y'all's thoughts on the remaining games and, you know, just kind of maybe get your thoughts on, you know, what's doable and what's not.
I think they're going to probably rip off 11 straight. Oh, no. No, you know, you're right about one thing, Kevin, that the schedule, you look at it, and if you're playing decent, not even playing great football, but if you're playing decent football, there are a lot of winnable games mm-hmm. after the bye week. So, you know, the Raiders is not a super daunting team. You got to travel the West Coast, but they're not a super daunting team. Playing at the Packers, obviously, never easy. The Lions have been underachieving this year, but they've got a lot of weapons. You know, they've beaten the Colts already. The Texans, very tough, although they've lost Brian Cushing for the year with an ACL today. Titans, twice on that list, certainly beatable teams. Bills, Jets, beatable. Dolphins, beatable. Patriots is tough at any point, but if they have the division wrapped up, who knows, you know, how much that game will matter to them. So, yeah, again, it's all about what level of football you're playing when you play them, John. I mean, but the right now the front half of the schedule, or the, you know, the pre bye week schedule looks a lot tougher than the post bye week schedule.
Yeah, it's been very tough, and you know, the one thing they have shown this team is it can go on the road and function. It has played better on the road than it has at home, frankly, mm-hmm. and that those games that you would have expected them to win before the season, which were, I would say, Minnesota and Indianapolis fell into that category, they've played well, and it's been competitive at the end. They won the Colts game, and they lost the Vikings game.
And Minnesota's better than we thought they were at the time.
Yeah, so and the Colts, you know, showed on Sunday they can win games. So there are plenty of games where the Jaguars can be competitive and where I think they'll be in it in the fourth quarter. The problem is to go on a streak, while we're talking about, you need to have some games where you're up, where you're 21-10 in the fourth quarter. So far, they have not shown us that we should expect that. But certainly, if some things go right and they start making some plays in the first half, then you're in the lead in the second half and you can start controlling the tempo. They just haven't had any games where they're in control of what's going on, where they can sort of be in the positive down and distance, where they have the ball up 8 at some point, and they can make a good decision about controlling clock, you know, where they don't have to pass in situations. You have to get up to be able to do what you want to do.
Yeah, and again, if the Jaguars aren't playing well, and it doesn't, some of those games you'd say, yeah, those are winnable, suddenly change in context.
Well, right, and so, and the glass half empty people out there are saying there's not a game on that schedule they can't
right.
lose. And that's true.
Yeah.
This team must play better. If it starts to play better, there's a bunch of winnable games. But so far they haven't done that.
Yeah, and they've got to show that they can do that and continue to do it. All right, let's take time out. When we come back, we'll hear from head coach Mike Mularkey, comment he made last night on the Mike Mularkey Show, as well as more of your calls, 800-355-NFL1. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado, the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right after this timeout, right here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher, Joe Fortunato at the controls. Jaguars Rewards Program now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today.
Could you say today a little deeper?
Today.
Thanks.
Yeah. Mike Mularkey last night on the Mike Mularkey Show, 6 o'clock Monday evenings, had this to say.
I visited with each guy after the game in his locker, and I just told him again, appreciate the effort they have put out to this point. Stick together. This is a time to find out about who we are and how we can respond to the situation we put ourselves in. It's basically what you earn. This is what we've earned, 1-4. The thing these guys, I think, see is we have flashed some good football, and it just hasn't been for 60 minutes. Even looking at the game yesterday, with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, they just kicked a field goal to go up 6-3. You know, we just, for some reason, imploded offensively when we came out with a penalty and an interception for a touchdown. And from that, it just it went downhill. And we have to learn, you know, okay, even if there is a negative play, we've got to be able to overcome it.
One thing I've really noted with Mike Mularkey here in his first year as head coach, very honest about things. He's not a guy who's going to tell you something he doesn't believe in. I mean, he's certainly saying that. And one of the interesting points of that comment was that he went around to each and every player at their locker to talk to him after the game. That's unusual. In fact, it may have happened, but I don't ever remember hearing about that happening with a coach after, you know, right after a game, going to each player individually like that.
No, and you know, you have to credit him again. In the off season, he implemented what he wanted to get in here. He's done a good job of getting his message across. The players know what he's about. As he has said often, you know, this team needs something good to happen, and it's clear Mike still believes it's going in the right direction. He still likes what he sees, and he saw in Buffalo how one win, getting something right, getting the guys believing in what they're doing, can turn things around. And you know, he really believes that if they can get a good win, if they can put a good half together with all three phases playing well, that things are going to turn for this team.
You know, I went back and looked at that Bills team, by the way. That was not, I mean, it was a pretty good team, but they weren't exactly loaded. That was 2008, by the way, where
it was 2004.
2000. I'm sorry, was that right? 2004.
Yes.
Is that the one we're looking at?
Yes.
Let me pull it up here. Yeah, that's right. 2004. I'm sorry. 2004. That was a good Bills team. They finished third in the division that year. Finished 9-7, but they actually started off 0-4, and then were 1-5 at one point.
Right.
Before getting things turned around, that was the Drew Bledsoe led team. Willis McGahee, Travis Henry was the backup running back. Eric Molds. They had, you know, a little more firepower on defense with Takeo Spikes and Sam Adams, but that wasn't exactly a team loaded with future,
right,
Hall of Famers.
And if you look at that team, too, that season, I think in the first five games, I wrote about it today, but in the first five games, I think they scored 20 points once, if I'm not mistaken, and they were held to 10, 6 a couple of times, and they were struggling offensively. And then they put together a six-game stretch where I think they scored 32, 33 every game.
Yeah, 38, 22, 37, 36,
yeah.
42, 37, 33, 41.
That's a pretty dramatic turnaround.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can hear fans out there saying, oh, the Jaguars ain't going to score 33 points in a game. But I would assume that Bills fans, after seeing that offense for the first four or five games of that season, were probably thinking, hey, there's no way. I mean, they had scored 6, 10, you know, so.
Now, the big benefit.
We'll see.
The big benefit that Bills team has, that this Jaguars team does not, is they had some guys who were veterans.
Absolutely.
At those key positions. You know, Drew Bledsoe was 32 years old at that point. McGahee was young, but Eric Molds was 31 years old. Lee Evans was young. He was a rookie. But they had some guys who had been around a bit.
Yes.
And that does go a long way to helping things out. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can also get us on Twitter or on Facebook.
By the way, all those social media questions, heck, even the phone lines, brought to you by our good friends at CopyFax. This from Facebook, from Timothy. He says, guys, this always seems like it's a quarterback complaint. How about one of you highly intelligent, good-looking sports pontificators talk about the offensive line?
I guess I'll have to take this
one. Wait, did he actually say highly intelligent sports pontificators?
Not even close.
Oh. One of you jerks talk about
That's
the offensive
right.
line. All right, I'll tell you a little bit about the offensive line. Eugene Monroe, I went back, and there was only one play where there was any kind of substantial pressure from Eugene Monroe from his side. That was on a play where he actually blocked the guy down to the ground, and the guy was around Gabbert's feet, and he stepped up when he was in the end zone and avoided a safety. But Monroe's playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a better job of pass blocking, particularly against a very good Bears defensive front. On Sunday, and there were more opportunities for Gabbert to make some plays downfield.
I thought it was significantly better. And again, I've not gone back and watched it play by play as you have. My sense was that unless the Bears brought extra people, they did a really good job keeping them off Gabbert. And in the first half especially, I thought this was the first game this season where Blaine did not play particularly well without pressure. And you know, that happens, and it's got to stop happening so much. But in answer to the offensive line, I thought it was one of their better games. They did not run block particularly well,
right.
But the Bears were so stacked against the run that there was no way they were going to be able to run well unless they opened it up by passing more.
I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you that I thought Gabbert played well, but I'm looking at progress in terms of some issues that have cropped up. Didn't see him bailing out. There was only one pass where he kind of back-footed it, and he threw a beautiful pass to Blackman on that play. It was called back because of a holding call.
Right. It was a nice pass.
And, again, just missed on a play to Shorts, just missed on another play on the one down the right side to Blackman. There was a play at the beginning of the second quarter down the left sideline to Mercedes on a fade. If he had gone back shoulder, and Mercedes would have just been able to basically
right.
post up and catch it, would have been a touchdown. So there are some opportunities there. But again, one of the issues is right now this team doesn't have the margin of error
right.
to not take advantage when those plays are there, and Gabbert's not at the point in his career where he's going to take it, you know, where he's taking advantage of them every time that they present themselves.
Right, and what people are tired of is four or five good plays, and we're talking about flashes. And, you know, there's a feeling that it needs to get past the point where it's just a few flashes and we're excited about three or four completions, and I get that. There has certainly been progress since last year. I think we're really to the point where I don't know that the pocket presence, meaning the you know, the ducking.
The chuck and duck.
I wasn't as convinced last year as a lot of people were that was a huge issue anyway. I don't see very much of it at all this year, particularly if you watch other quarterbacks. Every quarterback – when they're feeling the rush, is going to lean away from it. I don't even know that that's what we're talking about with Blaine anymore. I think we're talking about when the throw's there, making the accurate throw, making the right read, being patient and hanging in the pocket when he has time, which has been an issue the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it's the timing of things that I think is part of it. So that's definitely a part of this conversation, and we'll get more into that here in just a bit. Let's go back to the phone lines, 800-355-NFL1. John is in Keystone, who's up next here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. John, how you doing?
Yeah, and it might just be me, but to me it looks like some of his passes, he's trying to make it more catchable, like maybe putting a little more air under it, you know, not taking a little bit of the zip off of it, and which I know that if he is, that'd be harder for him to, you know, throw the accurate pass that he's used to throwing.
Well, and some guys are you know, the just always throw the rocket. Some guys can adjust and learn to throw it with a little better touch. And I'll give an example. David Garrard in 2007 clearly changed how he was throwing the football and went from putting a lot of smoke on it and was throwing it with better touch and became a better quarterback. You have to be able to throw both kinds of passes in the NFL. And again, that's part of the learning curve for a guy like Gabbert, who was, listen, Andrew Luck came in. Andrew Luck is a touch passer anyway. He had that. He's got a decent arm, but he's an accurate touch passer. Gabbert's guy who's got the stronger arm, and you've got to develop some of that touch.
Yeah, and this needs to start turning in Blaine's favor, and he needs to start playing more consistently and playing better. He's the first one to say that, you know, you can't have two picks for touchdown. That's something that he had not done a lot before. You know, those kind of things can't happen for this team, and everybody knows that. But there's no question that, you know, everything on the Jaguars needs to start turning. And certainly there is a time limit on how much time he'll get. I'm not saying it's this season, but the improvement has to start coming. And there has to be more consistent play.
Yeah. All right. Time for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. Again, LaRon Robinson still dealing with a concussion issue. We won't know about him playing because there's no game this week.
Right.
Until next week.
He won't practice this week, by the way.
Darryl Smith expecting that this could be the game that he returns, the Raiders game, a week from Sunday. And then Dwight Lowry had an ankle and had the boot on in the locker room and keeping the weight off of it. So That's kind of a touchy one, too. We'll see how he comes out, because obviously an important member of the Jaguars' defensive backfield. All right, that's the injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. Back with more Jaguars reporters presented by Burger King, including your calls at 800-355-NFL1. This is Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today, 800-355-NFL1. You can also get us on Twitter and on Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. By the way, Thursday, the announcement will be made in London about who the Jaguars will be playing in the 2013 London game. Josh Scobie is flying over there, as is Shad Khan and a number of other dignitaries. So we'll be looking forward to hearing who the Jaguars will be playing in 2013 in London. All right, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, the Scouts' Eye unsung player of the game. Tough to find him in the games like we saw on Sunday, but here was who the GM picked.
Brian Anger. Brian hit a 65-yard punt from our own 9 midway through the second quarter. It enabled us to shut them down offensively and get the ball back, and we put ourselves in a potential scoring position there. But he averaged for the day 48, and he is first in the NFL in gross and third in net punt average.
Kind of tells you about the game when you got to go to the punter as the unsung hero.
Well, and there's no question, the punt he had, I forget the situation, but it was when they were backed up and he kicks it 65 yards out. That was clearly why you got him. He's a flip the
now
field.
Now do something with it.
That completely changed the field position. Yep. He did his job. He's going to be really good.
Yeah.
He is really good.
Yeah, he really is. He's been terrific so far. Then you heard first and third in gross and net punting so far.
I'm just first in gross. So that's,
well, you've always been outstanding in that area. All right, we like to patch a hole in the ozone as we find a question from one of the many minions of John Osher that didn't quite make it on Jaguars.com but did make it right here on the show. Jason in Jacksonville, you mentioned Gabbert's internal clock and feeling the rush too quickly was becoming a major problem. Besides getting more time in the pocket, how does he improve on this and fix what is becoming a major problem?
Well, I think only time will tell. I mean, it's and I included this email in this segment because Mike has mentioned it several times in the last couple of weeks. Clearly, this is the issue that is most pressing for Blaine right now. He's standing in. But is he getting rid of the ball a little too quickly, not waiting for receivers to clear? Is that the problem? I don't think it's happening all the time, but it's been enough for Mike to mention it on several occasions. So it's obviously an issue that has to be fixed, or I shouldn't say fixed. He must get better and more consistent at that.
Yeah, and so when you talk about what's the problem with the passing game, and at times it has been – protection has been an issue, but it really wasn't that much of an issue against the Bears. So if he's throwing it too quickly, it's not allowing that extra step or two for a receiver to clear some space and get that separation. So it all kind of falls into on each other, and it all has an impact on on the little parts of things.
Right. And let's be clear, I'm not sitting here saying that's why they're 32nd in passing. It's just part of the puzzle. And it's something that, you know, people always say, oh, you guys are apologizing for blank. Well, they're not. They're saying this is part of it. There's no question this is part of it. Now, there are also plenty of examples of too much pressure, too many bad routes. So that's part of it, too. But that seems to be the part above anything else that's got to get better with Blaine.
All right, let's get a call in here. Vaughn on the south side is up on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Vaughn, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. Man, I like to talk about that defense. If Rasheem Mathis was a blanket, he couldn't cover anybody. I mean, he's getting burnt left and right. He is our weakest link right now. He's supposed to be one of our strongest links, but he is our weakest link.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's safe to say he's still coming back from the ACL and getting stronger. It's apparent the teams are not wanting to go at Derek Cox as much, although Brandon Marshall had some success. So, I wouldn't say he's playing as well as he did last year before the injury.
And again, to me, that's one position in this day and age in the NFL.
Yeah.
You can never have enough. And I don't think Aaron Ross has lived up to the expectations so far. So, you know, you've got a guy.
He's not playing nearly as much. So,
well, and that's
obvious.
A reason for that, right? So you've got those two guys. You know, so yeah, Derek Cox is playing well, but you've got to have more than just one guy who can rely on. You know, to cover these guys. But again, as we mentioned, you get better pass rush. You don't have to cover them quite as long, and it makes things better there.
I would say this is a situation with Rasheen where you will probably look back on this season and hear afterward that they really needed him to do what he's doing. He's probably taken one for the team, in a sense. It's very difficult to be back 100% less than a year off of an ACL with that spot. And he's doing what he can, helping where he can, and clearly they don't have anybody who can do a better job at that spot.
Rasheen also wanted to be back.
No question.
Not only does he want to be on the field, but it's a contract year, so you want to get out there and you want to make sure that you're showing you can play.
Oh, no question. But I mean, it's all off season. You heard he was getting there. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable, considering he's less than a year off of an ACL, that he's on the field playing and has made some plays. So, you know, I think he will continue to get better.
Tom has tweeted in, why does Mike Thomas get twice the snaps of Cecil Shorts III?
I don't know.
I don't either. Shorts has been one of the, you know, rays of light on this offense so far this year. Made just a beautiful catch on the far sideline yesterday. Has made the two biggest catches of the season for the Jaguars.
I know they really, really like Cecil, really think he's a guy that's going to be a part of things going forward. And you know, I don't know why he's not playing more.
Yeah, I don't either. And, again, this is having the bye week right now. Those are kind of the kind of answers or kind of questions that I would expect that are being asked in the coaches' meetings.
Yeah.
And in the, you know, listen,
I would be surprised if he's
we,
not more a part of it going forward.
What if we – is there anybody else that you think that is going to be a part of it more going forward?
He really stands out offensively.
Yeah.
I mean not particularly. I think he's the guy who stands out.
Again, I called the second the segment after the bye week in this season. Now, because of where the Jaguars are at 1-4, it's a referendum on the future.
Right.
So everybody's calling for people's heads right now.
Right.
Call for it all you want. This next 11 games will determine how things are going to look going forward
for this
franchise on the field. All right, no Jaguars reporters next week because we only do it after a game. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And, of course, tomorrow night, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. John will join Brian Sexton, Tony Baselli, Jeff Loggeman. Go out and say hi to the guys as they bring you Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30 at 6 o'clock tomorrow. For John Osher, for Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying, thanks for listening to Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King, and good night from Jaguar Central.